You're listening to Biceps After Babies Radio, episode 316. Hello and welcome to Biceps After Babies Radio, a podcast for ladies who know that fitness is about so much more than pounds lost or PRs. It's about feeling confident in your skin and empowered in your life. I'm your host, Amber Brzezicki, a registered nurse, personal trainer, wife, and mom of four. Each week, my guests and I will excite and motivate you to take action in your own personal fitness as we talk about nutrition, exercise, mindset, personal development, and executing life with conscious intention. If your goal is to look, feel, and be strong and experience transformation from the inside out, you, my friend, are in the right place. Thank you for tuning in. Now let's jump into today's episode. Hey, 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 welcome back to another episode of Biceps After Babies Radio. I'm your host, Amber Brzezicki, and today I kind of have a fun, different kind of episode. I recently got back from a trip to Costa Rica with my husband. We went on a surf camp for a week, and yes, it was amazing. We had a great time, and I had some experiences while I was on that trip that I thought would be really cool to come and talk about on the podcast, because I dealt with a lot of fear on this trip, and we'll get into why that was and how it kind of played out. But as I was kind of processing some of that while we were on our trip, I was thinking about a lot of corollaries or relationships to the fear that I was experiencing and trying to move through on this trip to a lot of my clients, and you know, the fears that they're experiencing as they're getting into macro counting or as they're, you know, starting to come up against some of the more challenging inner work that they have to do as they step into a new identity and a new way of being. And I mean, fear is never going away. All of us experience fear. If you have an intact limbic system, you experience fear. And a lot of times that fear keeps us from the things that we want to do. And so I thought, what a great opportunity to be able to come on, kind of share some personal stories, some of my experience, share a little bit about my trip, and be able to relate it to something that I think will be really valuable for many of you. So before we get into the trip itself, I have to kind of explain a little bit of backstory about how this trip came to be. So we have lived in Southern California this time around for now 7 years. And I say this time around because my husband did residency in Southern California. So we lived here for 4 years. Then we moved away to North Carolina for fellowship for 3 years and then came back and he got hired on as an attending. And we've been here for 7 years. So the first time around when we lived in California during my husband's residency, he had a friend who taught us how to surf. Actually, we had a friend and we also had my sister-in-law. So I think we actually went surfing the first time with my sister-in-law. So we went down to San Diego. You know, she said, I'll teach you how to surf. So we did one day of surfing. And if you've ever been surfing, you don't learn a ton in one day, but we went out for the first time and then we had this other friend in Southern California who was really into surfing. And so we went many more times with him, got our own wetsuits, you know, kind of invested in some, we started with some foam boards and, you know, we just kind of dabbled around in surfing. And honestly, the places that we went surfing, actually, I remember, I'm like remembering stories. The places that we normally went surfing in Southern California were not really crazy places. They're very nice, small surf, easy to learn on. The waves, you know, break a little bit slower. They're close into shore. And I remember actually after we had gone surfing a couple times with my sister-in-law, and then we went with this friend a couple times, and we're like, yeah, we got this. Like, we can do this. And so we actually decided one day to go to Huntington Beach, which if you're in the surfing world, you know that there's competitions that are held in Huntington Beach, like surf competitions. And so the waves are a little bigger in Huntington. And we didn't go anywhere that was like super large. Like, listen, I've learned a lot more about surfing. I can recognize like these waves are not even that big. But I just remember we thought we were hot stuff and we went up to Huntington and like tried to go surf in Huntington and we could not even make it out past the break. Like we just kept getting pounded and pounded and pounded. And I just remember turning around and like going back to my car and being like, okay, well, we're not surfing in Huntington Beach anytime soon because we couldn't even make it out. So anyway, we surfed and, you know, whatever. We moved to North Carolina, obviously didn't do a ton of surfing while we lived in North Carolina, although we did try like once or twice on the East Coast, but it wasn't the same. Moved back and my husband really likes surfing a lot more than I do. Like, I'm fine. I like it. It's fine. I will go. I just don't like being cold. That's my thing. I don't like being cold. And if you've ever surfed in the Pacific Ocean, it's way colder than the Atlantic Ocean. And so, you know, most of the year, even in the summer, you need a wetsuit, or at least I need a wetsuit. And so my surfing window from like the time that I was willing to surf in a wetsuit was from like May to like maybe October. That was the time frame that I was willing to get into the cold water, even in a wetsuit. And my husband likes surfing so much, and maybe he just, the water doesn't bother him as much. He's willing to go like almost year round with a wetsuit. And so we kind of got into this pattern where he went surfing a lot more than me, because I'm not willing to do it in the cold. He also goes at like 6 a.m. in the morning, like right when the sun gets up. So it's not only is it cold, but it's like dark and cold. Anyway, it's just like not my thing. So my husband's done a lot more surfing than I have. I've done sun surfing. He really likes it. It's like a big hobby of his. He likes to invest time and money and resources and energy into it because he just really, really enjoys it, which is great. I'm so happy for him to have his own hobby. But he got in his mind that he found this YouTube channel of the surf school, and he like learned a lot from them. And he got this idea that he wanted to go on the surf retreat, where it was like a week long retreat. I'd been saying I wanted to go to Costa Rica for a long time. And he kind of like, you know, just not really jumped on that. And then he found out that they went to the surf retreat. There was a surf retreat in Costa Rica. And he was like, oh, it's the best of both worlds. I'm going to take Amber to Costa Rica, and then we'll get to do this surf retreat, and it'll be super fun. I was not so jazzed about it because, yes, I've wanted to go to Costa Rica, and I've been talking about going to Costa Rica for a very long time. But it was not my idea that we would go to Costa Rica and, like, go to a surf camp. It was my idea that we'd go to Costa Rica and, like, go lay on a beach and go, like, to the rainforest and do some of, like, the touristy things. I was not thinking that I wanted to spend my week-long vacation doing a ton of surfing. That was not my idea of a vacation. So we kind of talked about this, and he finally said, like, cause I was kind of dragging my feet. I didn't really want to commit to it. And he was like, well, it's okay. I'll just go, you know, I'll go on my own. Like, plenty of people go on these surf trips on their own. Like, I'll just go on my own. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh heck no, you are not going to Costa Rica without me. Like, I don't want to be left out of this trip. So I finally was like, fine, just book it. Like, I'll go. Now, the reason I'm telling this story, there is a point to this part of the story. Because as we got closer and closer and closer to the trip, I had this realization of something that I was doing that I think we do a lot in our fitness journeys. And that was this. I didn't really want to go on this trip. I was not super excited about it. It was not my idea of like the ideal trip for us to get away. I was like, we're going to be doing all the surfing. I don't love surfing. Like, it's fine, but I didn't really want to go on the trip, but I also didn't really want to be left behind. That was a terrible option. So I had these two terrible options. It's like, be left behind on this vacation, or, you know, go on this vacation that I'm not very excited about. Like, two options. Didn't really like either of the options. And so I was doing this thing that often we do where it's like, I made the choice, but in the back of my mind, I was still very resentful of my husband. Like, I was still blaming him a lot for it. And it was kind of like, I was kind of going to it this attitude of like, I probably won't like it. It probably won't be very much fun. And it's going to be his fault. Like, it's his fault that I'm not having a good time, because he kind of like, you know, he put me in this spot where I had to make a choice between like these two terrible options. And so that's, you know, that's this guy's fault. I had this realization maybe about 2 weeks before we went on our trip. And I have been doing some like inner work on myself, and I was finally able to spot this and realize it. And so I brought it up to my husband, and I said, hey, you know, like, and I think my husband could sense it as well. Like, he could sense it as we were going closer that I wasn't like super excited about this trip. And so I finally like said, hey, look, I realize I've been doing this thing where I am not very excited about this trip. And you know, I have this like idea that I'm going to get on it. It's not going to be very fun. And then it's going to be all your fault when I don't have fun on this trip. And I'm sorry for approaching it that way. It's not how I want to approach it. I'm a big girl. I can make a choice. and I have my choice. And when I make my choice, then I need to own the consequences that are associated with that choice. And so either I need to decide that I want to go on this trip, and that's my choice, and I get to have the experience that I want to have on it, or I need to not go on the trip. And I need to own that of like, I didn't want to go on the trip, and I am willing to stick with that. And it was really important for me to make that decision. I said, hey, I want to step in. I just want to get off the fence that I've been sitting on. I want to step in and I want to make the choice to go on this trip. And I'm going to do my best to have the best time, you know, possible. And even if I don't have a good time, like, that's not your fault. That's my fault. That's my choice and my consequences. And, you know, that's for me to own and not to pass off onto you. And so that was a really great conversation that we had, and a really important moment for me to really step in and own the choice that I was making and not make it somebody else's fault. So the reason I tell this story is because we do this all the time, all the time. This is something I work with my clients in Macros 101 a lot about, is this idea of owning our choices. So often, especially when we come into like health and fitness journey and we are going through making changes with our diet and making changes with our workout and, you know, making internal changes as well, we get put in positions where it feels like we don't have the best options. We don't have the choices that we wish we would have had. So, you know, an example may be you are at this party and, you know, part of you wants to enjoy the food that is available to you at the party. You want to enjoy that, but you don't want to accept the consequences that come alongside of that. And then the other option feels like a terrible option as well, is that go to the party and like not eat the food and stick to my plan and stick to my goals. Well, that doesn't feel very fun either. It's like, there's like no good choice. We put ourselves in between like this rock and a hard place. We don't have any really great choices. And so then we kind of we choose one, but we don't own that choice. It's like a passive choice. It's like a choice that is like, we blame our external circumstances. We blame other people. We blame because we want to externalize that choice and not have to own it. Instead of doing what is much healthier, and where I'm working a lot, again, with my one Macros 101 clients to get them to, is this place where you can make a full choice and you can own it. It's like, I have these two choices. I'm a big girl. I can make a choice where like neither of them is like the ultimate choice I wish it was. I have to sacrifice something for both of these choices. And I get to make that choice as a grown adult. And then I get to own that choice, and I get to own what comes after that choice. But so many of us are making choices somewhat passively and then not owning them and then getting mad at the consequences and then, you know, blaming our age or our circumstances or our spouse or the party or like whatever, blaming everybody else for the choices that we made. And so this was a really important defining moment for me to kind of practice a little bit of what I preach, of saying, hey, I'm going to step in. I'm going to step in fully. And I am choosing as a grown adult to go on this vacation. It's not your job for me to have a good time. It's not your job to make that decision for me. It's not your job to own my choice to go on this vacation. I'm choosing to go on it, and I'm, you know, going to fully step in. So I invite you to pay attention to areas of your life where you may be doing that, where you may be passing off decisions, or you may be passively making decisions instead of actively making the decision and owning it. And I will say, I have taught this concept for years, and it still creeps back in, right? It's one thing to understand a concept. It is a completely other thing to embody the concept, right? This is what we work on. I work on a lot with my Macros 101 clients, is like, yeah, I'm going to teach you the concept. Fantastic. And you're going to logically understand it. And you're going to be like, yes, Amber, that makes a ton of sense. But that is very different from then turning around and embodying it. And this is why coaching is so valuable, because again, it's one thing to learn, it is a complete another thing to actually embody it in your life. And coaching is the process that really helps with that embodiment. It helps you to start to have insight as to where you may not be embodying that, and then we can work with you on how to embody it. So as much as I've taught this concept, as much as I intellectually, logically understand this concept, as much as I can see this concept and the issue in other people, it still can be really hard to see it in ourselves. And again, that is why coaching can be so valuable. I always tell my clients, you can't read the prescription label from the inside of the bottle. right? Having that external person be able to look at the prescription bottle and read it for you is so valuable. And having that insight from external sources can be really valuable. So that's the first thing that I wanted to share from my trip. So that's how the trip got planned. And I decided to step in. We flew down to Costa Rica. My sister was so nice and came and stayed and watched my kids for us for the week. And, you know, we got to Costa Rica. It was a long trip. I mean, long, I guess I should put long in quotation marks. It was like long for us. We haven't done very many international trips. And so, you know, the 6-hour plane ride down there, and then it ended up being like a 4-hour drive to the little surf town that we stayed in. It was a long first day. So we get in to Nosara, which is where we ended up staying on the coast, and, you know, met everybody. And I'm going to skip forward to like the first day that we're in the water. Okay. So the way that the surf trip worked, and actually I really liked how the trip was laid out. It ended up actually being a really good mixture of surfing and time intensive stuff with surfing, and then a lot of free time to be able to actually vacation and relax and go do the things that we wanted to do. So I was really happy with the experience of the balance between the two. But the way that a lot of our days were structured was like this. So we would get up, you know, fairly early in the morning, because we would be timing it with the surf, right? We're trying to go out when the tides are best, when the wind is low. And so we would normally, you know, be out on the water by 6:30, 7-ish in the morning. And we had an hour and a half lesson out in the water. So we had a surf coach that was paired with my husband and I out in the water. And then there was also some of the people who were on the surf retreat, some of the coaches were on the shore, and they had these big, long zoom in cameras so that they could video us out on the waves. And we would do that for an hour and a half, practice our surfing, come in, have breakfast, and then we would go to our theory lesson. So again, this is where like the learning, that segmentation between like learning and implementation, learning and embodiment. We would go and do our book learning, and we walk through, you know, all the surf techniques. We talked about different types of boards. We talked about different types of swells. We talked about positioning your body, where your eyes should be, where your feet should be, how to read the surf report, right? So like every day was a little bit different, but we're learning all of the technical aspects so that we logically understand surfing. And then after that, we would do our video analysis. So this was really cool. So I've done weightlifting for lots and lots of years. And one of the most valuable things for me to learn how to squat and deadlift and bench and do all of these heavy compound lifts has been videoing myself and then being able to go back and either have a coach review my videos, or, you know, once I got familiar with what body position was supposed to look like, me going back and being able to review my videos and say, oh, look, I can see my chest drops too much on that squat. I need to think chest up on my next one. Okay, I can go and do another set. Or, oh, look how my knees are, you know, sliding too far forward. Or look how I'm coming up on the toes on this squat. And I can then adjust my body based off of what I'm seeing in the video, because it is really hard to be able to know where all of your body is in space. Like, we have this concept called proprioception, which is our brain's ability to know where our body is in space. When you're doing a compound lift, there's so much dynamic action, right? Your knees are somewhere, your feet are somewhere, like something's happening with your hips and your back, and your abs have to stay tight, and you have to keep your upper back tight, and all of these things. It's really hard to keep your mind focused on so many parts of the movement, which is why videoing and being able to see yourself move and be like, oh, I thought my chest was rising in line with my hips, but man, it is not. I need to really focus on that. And that's the cue that I take into the next lift. So videoing has been super helpful with getting better at lifting. And that's really hard when you surf, because typically there's nobody on the shore that is videoing you. And so it makes surfing actually a really hard sport to learn. One, because it's really hard to get that feedback because you can't actually see yourself doing it. And two, it's not consistent, right? Like every time I go and unrack a bar from the rack to do a squat, like the environment's the same. Nothing's dynamic. The ground's not moving. The bar's not moving. It's the same bar that I've always lifted with. Like my shoes are the same. My belt is the same. Like there's so many constants that it allows for a lot more repetitiveness of the same thing to really build that muscle memory. Surfing is not like that at all. Surfing is dynamic. You never get the same wave twice. It's always different. And it makes it really hard and challenging to learn. So one of my favorite things about the surf camp was that we got to have video analysis. So they would video our waves, the waves that we caught, and then they would slow down the speed of the video. And we would sit with a coach and they would walk through all of our the waves that we caught. And they would start to point things out. And they would say, see how both of your hands are over, you know, the right rail. We need to have one hand over each rail. Look where your shoulders are. Look how you dropped your chest when you did your pop-up. Look where your feet are positioned on the board. They need to be, you know, more in the center of the board. Look how tall you're standing. You need to get lower. Look how that back knee is not turned in, right? So all of these technique things, one that I didn't even know, and two, that I was able to see in action on the video analysis was just amazing. Like, I learned so much just in that like short week because we had theory, we had implementation, and then we had coaching. And it's funny, I didn't even make this connection until I'm just saying this now, but the reason I was able to learn so much and grow so much in my surfing in 1 week was because we had those three pieces. Like, we had the theory, we had the content, we had the information, we had the implementation of it out with a coach out in the water. And then we had, you know, the video analysis and review of it. And, you know, that's something that we do inside of Macros 101. And it's such an important part of how I structure the program is there is content associated with it. I teach a lot of content, but then it is that implementation or that coaching of getting you out in the water, seeing how you do, and then being able to coach you through it that makes the program so valuable. Anyway, that's kind of an aside. We are opening doors to Macros 101 very, very soon on March 4th. So if you are not on the wait list, I highly recommend getting on the wait list at bicepsafterbabies.com/waitlist. Okay, so anyway, I learned a ton that week, and that would usually take us up to about like noon. Like, all of that, the surfing stuff would take us up to about noon. And then the rest of the day, we had time to hang out, go check out the town, hang out with the other people who were there for the surf retreat. We spent a lot of time just relaxing and reading. And like I said, it was a good breakdown. It ended up being a really good breakdown between the surfing and then the vacationing. Which I was a little bit nervous about going into it, hoping that it wasn't going to be like all surfing all the time. And it wasn't. It was a good mixture. Okay, so then going to day one of the trip. Day one, looking back, we had five sessions with our surf instructor out in the water. And looking back, day one was actually the easiest conditions of all the days. We didn't know that at the time, but it was definitely the easiest. The waves were nice and big. They, like, big meaning wide. They didn't break too fast. And it was just, the conditions were beautiful. Like, it was a beautiful first day. And everything was going really great. We started in the white water. We started working on our pop-up. And when our coach felt good about our pop-up on the white water, he said, okay, you know, let's go out past the break so we can catch some of the, they call them green waves, the unbroken waves, out past the break. And so we've been surfing for a while, but most of the places that we go surfing, like almost all the places we go surfing, don't really have a break that is hard to get out past. So the break is where the waves are crashing. And it, you know, becomes kind of consistent where like the waves crash and that's called the break. And you have to get out beyond that if you want to be able to catch these unbroken waves. And typically waves come in sets. And so you'll have three, you know, four, seven waves that will come and then it'll be kind of a little bit of a break and then more waves will come. And so typically you're trying to kind of sneak out in that break, but even so, you're often going to get caught in the break. And that's just kind of part of like getting out past it. If you're on a short board, you can do what's called a duck dive. So if that wave is coming in and it's going to crash, you can duck dive under it. You can actually like take the point of your surfboard, the nose of your surfboard, and duck and dive down underneath the wave as it like crashes. So you do this like little duck dive maneuver every time, and you can kind of, even when the waves are crashing, you can get out past the break. With a longboard, it's a little bit more challenging. And both my husband and I ride longboards. Longboards are obviously bigger. They're a lot more buoyant. They're easier to get up on, which is why learners often start on a longboard. But that's also a problem because they're a lot more buoyant. You can't really duck dive a longboard down under a big wave. So what you end up having to do is called turtle rolling. So if you imagine you're laying on your surfboard on your belly, and the wave is coming and is crashing, what you do is you roll over so that the board is now on top of you and you're underneath the board in the water. And you kind of pull the nose down of the board and kind of pull it down. And, you know, the wave crashes up over your surfboard and you're like underneath it. And then once the wave passes, then you roll back and you turtle roll back up. And now your you know, belly is back up on the surfboard. And now you can keep paddling and try to paddle out. So I don't have a ton of experience turtle rolling, I will say, or I didn't have a ton of experience turtle rolling before we went on this trip, because where we surf, you just don't really have to do it. Like, the waves are real small, break isn't very big, it's really close to shore. Sometimes you can literally like walk out past the break. Like, that's how close the break is where we surf. So turtle rolling was kind of a new experience for me. So the first day, we had to turtle roll a couple of times, but like I said, the conditions were beautiful. There was more time in between the sets. And so I turtle rolled a couple of times, but got out past the break, no big deal. Caught a couple of waves, was feeling really good. Day was beautiful. And then I caught one wave. I rode it in some ways. And, you know, part of you when you catch a wave, or this is how I am, swimming out past the break is really tiring and it's exhausting, and turtle rolling is tiring and exhausting. And so when I catch a wave, I'm riding the wave in, but I don't want to ride the wave too long, because if I ride it too far in, man, now I have a hard time getting out past the break again. So it's like this balance between trying to enjoy the wave, ride it, but not ride it like on infinity, because then I just know I have to like swim back and it's just a lot longer. So anyway, I caught this wave, rode it, you know, jumped off, turned around, started swimming back, and I just got caught in a set. You know, I'm just like fighting this set of waves, trying to get out past the break, getting tired, getting exhausted, and still, I'm still like a baby surfer. I don't really know exactly what I'm doing. I'm trying my best to like remember all the knowledge that we've learned and like trying to implement it and what my coach told me and all these things. And this big wave comes up, and I just remember like looking up. I'm trying to paddle out, right? I just remember looking up, and there were two people trying to catch this wave. And there was a guy on the right and a lady on the left. And the guy went left on the wave. And I don't know if she didn't see me. I don't really know what happened, but she ended up, like, she was on a shortboard too. She ended up going right into me. And luckily I had enough like wits about me. Again, I'm not like a professional surfer or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but I at least had enough like self-protective mechanism to take my longboard and like put it in front of me as she's like coming towards me. So I put the longboard in between me and her, and she literally like goes over me, over my longboard, hits my longboard. We both come up sputtering. Her it broke her fin, completely broke off, is lost in the water. I look at my board, there's a huge gash in my board where you can just see the fin just sliced into my longboard, cut it all up. She's mad because she lost her fin. Thankfully, she was concerned about me. She's like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm okay. Are you okay?" "Yes, we're okay." Like, I was a little shaken up. She was pretty mad about her fin, and, you know, somewhat rightfully so. I totally take responsibility for like not knowing exactly where I'm supposed to be in the water and not knowing how to like avoid people really well at this point. However, my coach reassured me that it was really her fault, that she could see me. You can turn on a dime on a shortboard, and she should have been able to go around me. So whatever, it's not here to like, not here to like place blame of me versus her. It happened. And so I had this big gash in my board, and that's a problem because boards are made of foam and then like epoxy hardness that like covers the foam. So when you get a ding in your surfboard, it cuts through that fiberglass, and now you've just exposed all the foam, which obviously is not water resistant. And so now you get a lot of water in your board and it can kind of destroy your board. So I was like, okay, great. I told my coach. My coach was like, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm okay." A little like shaken, but I was like, "I'm going to go in. I'm going to talk to the coaches, see what they want to do with my board," because it had this huge gash in it. So I went in, the coaches were really nice. They were more concerned about me than the board. And what they ended up doing was just like covering it with some tape. And then they'll say, well, we'll go get repaired after the day, you know, go back out and, you know, finish up your serve session. So I did. I'm a little like flustered. I'm a little like definitely like some adrenaline is pumping through my body at this point because that was really scary. You can really get injured out on a surfboard. The most dangerous thing out in the water is your board, because the boards are heavy and they're hard. And they, you know, if you get hit in the head with the board, it's dangerous. The fins can hit you. Like managing your board and being aware of the other people's boards around you is the most important thing to stay safe when you're out in the water. So, I was like, okay, I'm going to go swim back out. And I had a rough paddle out trying to get out past the break. And by the time I did, I was exhausted. I was emotionally exhausted. I was really, really, really scared as I tried to like paddle out, that I was like so super terrified about anybody like near me, right? I was like, I didn't want anybody to be near me. I had a couple experiences where like there were people not even very close to me, but kind of like trying to catch the wave as I'm paddling out. And I just like flash back to that moment when I saw this woman like barreling towards me on this wave. And so I get out past the break and I just like keep swimming, like swim like way out past the break, because I don't want to be near any waves. I like don't want to be near anybody. I'm just like still really going through it with like this fear that is coming up. And I get out past the break and I just like break down. I just like start crying and I'm like releasing like all of the fear that, you know, I was feeling during that moment. It was kind of like it all kind of caught up to me after I did all the logical things of like making sure everyone was okay and going and getting the board taken care of and blah, 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 blah. And then I had a moment to like sit and I just like broke down. And I think my coach didn't really quite know what to do with it. Although he was very nice. He was like, you're not the first person who's had this happen, meaning the like breakdown out in the water. And so I'm just like crying and I can't catch my breath. I definitely am going through like trying to catch my breath, trying to slow everything down. And my coach was really good. He was like, take a deep breath, like just kind of breathe through it. Like it's all, you know, all of that like fear is coming up. And I was like, yeah, it is. I'm just really nervous to like go and do anything else today. You know, we didn't have a ton of time left. And so we kind of, I mean, I probably was out there for 10 minutes crying on my board. And finally, the coach was able to kind of coax me to come in a little bit. So I wasn't like so far out. And I can't even remember what we did. I don't even remember if I like caught waves after that. I think I caught a couple, but anyway, I was very scared, very, very nervous. And it was just kind of a traumatic experience. So we go in, we do the rest of the stuff. You know, I kind of talked to my husband about it and kind of share with him like my experience, and everyone was really sympathetic. And like, yeah, that's really scary. And great. Okay, now it's day two and I got to go back out, right? So I'm like trying to psych myself up for this of being like, okay, like I want to do this. I want to get better. I want to learn. But it's still really scary. So we get out on day two. And like I said, day one ended up being like the easiest waves of the whole week. Day two was the hardest waves. Again, this is all retroactive, like me looking back and looking at each day. We didn't know this at the time, but day two was really one. And then we went from like one to like 10 in one day. And the waves were super hard on day two. And, just had such a hard time like paddling out. The waves were a lot closer together, which makes the break, like the break between waves a lot like shorter, which makes it harder to paddle out. We had to do a lot more turtle rolls. And I just remember, I don't know if it's because my husband's bigger or what, but he like always makes it out past the break before I do. And so he got lucky, like he kind of snuck out past the break. I got caught in the break turtle rolling. And I just remember as I was just kind of like getting out there, my husband had been waiting for a while, but he was out there with the coach and he decided he was going to catch the wave that I was paddling out through. And he didn't end up catching it, but he went for it. He started paddling. All I see is like him coming towards me on this wave. I'm trying to paddle out. And again, all of my fear came back of that experience of like seeing that woman, having her hit me, like all of the trauma that came back with that. And I just like lost it. I was so mad at my husband. I was like, how could you do that to me? It was like the same experience, but now it wasn't just like some nameless woman. It was like my husband was coming towards me and was gonna like hit me with his board. He didn't, it was fine, but I lost it again. So now I'm like out past the break again, crying on my board. I'm like, is this gonna happen every freaking day? Am I just gonna be out here like so much fear coursing through my body, so much like anxiety, reliving this traumatic moment. Like, why the heck am I even doing this? This is so dumb. I remember thinking that. This is so dumb. And I'm like super embarrassed because I like, we paid all this money to come out on the surf trip. I'm just sitting out on my board, just like crying. And it was a sight to see. So that was day two. And you know, some of the things, cause I kind of want to like go back and go, we're going to talk about fear and how we kind of overcome fear and work through fear. And some of the things that I remember doing was trying to feel the fear. I think a lot of times with emotions, we don't want to feel the negative emotions. And so we try to push it down. We try to push it away. We try to like tell ourselves to be happy and just kind of, you know, it's okay. And kind of like, you know, gird up our loins and whatever. And I did remember just being like, it's okay. Like, just feel the fear. Like, what does it feel like? Where is it in my body? For me, it was like a really, really tight chest. And it like comes up into my throat when I feel like the tears start to come. And, you know, just identifying it. It's like, I am afraid right now. I'm feeling fear. It makes a ton of sense. I had this kind of traumatic experience. My brain is worried about it being repeated. For good reason, you know, that is a fear of, it is a risk of going out surfing. And, you know, so just trying to kind of sit with it, a lot of breathing. My coach was really good with like getting me to slow down my breathing and take a deep breath in and, you know, kind of just sit with it. So that was day two. Day three, I was like, okay, we're going to do it today. We're not going to cry. Kind of a darn day without crying. Come on. Day three was better. I would call it a medium day. So day one was easy. Day two was hard. Day three was like a medium day. And, I think I caught like three waves kind of on day two, like three waves in like the hour and a half that we were out there. Well, first of all, because I didn't even want to go out past the break. I told my coach, I was like, we're going to play on the whitewater for a while. Like I got to get my like feet back underneath me to even want to go out past the break. So I just didn't catch very many waves that day. So day three, I was like, okay, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry. Not going to cry. Not going to cry. And, I don't even remember what happened. It probably was like the same experience of getting out past the break, man. It just was like, it took everything out of me. I still had those flashback moments. And I do remember that, like, I only slightly teared up this time. Like before it was like full on crying out on my board. And this time it was only like wet eyes and the fear, like generating that kind of emotional response to me. And I remember telling my coach, I'm like, today, I only want to go for small waves, just small waves, only small waves. And the hard thing with small waves is that, the further out you sit, the typically like you're catching the bigger waves. And the further out you sit, you're less likely to get smacked by a rogue wave. The further in you sit, the further towards the shore you sit, you can catch some of the smaller waves, but then these big waves come and now you're completely in the impact zone. Like you're right where that wave is going to crash. And so you can kind of shift in a little bit to catch a little bit smaller waves, but you got to be on high alert because big waves will eat you. And I had this happen to me on day three where it's like, okay, I'm like, I only want small waves. I only want small waves. He's like, okay, we have to go in a little bit to like catch these small waves. And so I'm like, tenuously like paddling. And cause I know the closer I get to the shore, the more likely it is that like, I might get thrown off my board. And so, and that happened. We were like in and this rogue giant wave came and tried to paddle out past it, did not, got eaten by the wave. And if you've ever gotten hit with a big ocean wave, it is one of the most, like the power that is stored in the waves is incredible. Side note, I watch these like Netflix documentaries of people who go surf like Maverick, and my brain cannot even comprehend what it is like for these people to get like caught in those waves. I remember I watched a documentary and it was like people come out with like broken arms and limbs and legs and things like that because there's just so much power in the waves. And these were not even that big of waves. I'm telling you, like, they felt big to me, but my coach kept laughing when I was saying, these are big waves. He's like, yeah, no, they're not really. He's like, they are to you. They're not really that big of waves. So anyway, I got eaten by a wave. It sucks. You just like completely turned upside down. You're just hoping, like you're covering your head. You're hoping the board isn't going to hit you. You have this board, you know, tied to your leg with the leash. And so then the, you know, you get caught and then the board get caught and then it pulls you. I mean, it's just, it's not my favorite thing in the world. It's like a loss of control, a loss of just like having to kind of relax into the chaos. I actually remember that at one experience where it was like, my head didn't pop up quite as fast as I would have liked it to. Like I wanted to get a breath, but I got pulled back under. And I just remember like, you just can't fight it. Like you cannot fight the wave. There's nothing you can do to fight it. It only makes it worse. It only makes you use more oxygen. And so I just had to like, you just kind of gotta relax, like relax into the chaos, relax into it. It's like, there's no use fighting it. And I remember saying that to myself of like, I wanted to breathe, like I wanted to pop up and I just, the wave was not letting me. And I just remember, okay, just relax into it. Just take me where you're going to go. Like eventually I'm going to pop up. And you know, of course I did and I was fine. But man, like all of the fear came back in that moment and cried again, third day in a row. I'm like, holy freaking cow. Am I going to like get through a day without crying? Okay. So that was day three. Day four. I'm like, this is it. This is the day. This is the day I'm going to get through a surf session without crying. Still like the fear is a little bit, you know, gone down a little bit. I've caught a couple waves. That traumatic event is a little bit further in the past. This is the day. This was also like a medium day. And actually this day I was on, like, I caught so many waves on this day. It was definitely my best day. I probably caught 10 plus waves, which is a ton of waves for me to catch, way more than I caught on any other days. And I had my best ride, my longest ride like I've ever had in my life on this day. Like, it was a good day. And I didn't cry. It was the first day that I didn't cry. However, something like not great happened. So, let me tell you a little bit about like surfing etiquette. So with surfing etiquette, there is the peak of the wave, and then the wave breaks and it either, it breaks right or it breaks left. And, if it's, you know, breaking to the left, then the surfer wants to ride to the left. And if it's breaking to the right, the surfer wants to ride to the right. Now, when you're out there and you're trying to catch waves, oftentimes multiple people are trying to catch the same wave. You know, there's not always, you're not always in the right, quite the right position. And everybody's trying to catch waves when you're out there. So the etiquette is that as you are paddling, the person who has priority for catching the wave is the person who is closest to the peak. So if the peak is breaking left and you have someone, so that's, you know, via the surfer's perspective. So if it's breaking to my left and there is somebody on my right who is a little bit closer to the peak and they catch the wave, that's their wave. Even if I'm going to catch it, because now it's dangerous for me to try and catch it. Like they're the one who has a better ride. You have more push when you're at the peak. Like you have a better ride when you're at the peak. And so if that person who catches it closer to the peak, I, who is further away from the peak, should not take that wave. It's rude. It's called dropping in on somebody and it's bad etiquette. So, I mean, we learned this on like day one, right? And so you're like, okay, yeah, I like, got it. When you're out there and you're a newbie like me, and you're just scared so much about the waves and like trying to keep yourself safe and trying to remember all the things that your coaches are teaching you and all the techniques and like, where my arm is supposed to be. And keep my chest up when I pop up. I will tell you what, my scope of focus goes like so narrow, like so narrow. And I don't see anything else. So it happened this one time that I was paddling for a wave. I'm oblivious to like anything else that's going on. You're supposed to look up and down the wave. It's kind of like, you know, looking both ways before you cross the street. I'm like so in my head trying to think about all the other things that I just didn't even see the person. So apparently I dropped in on this guy and who should have gotten the wave, and I rode it, and it was awesome. It was an awesome ride. Like, I did so good. It was like one of the last waves of the day. And by the way, my coach told me to go for this one. I wrote it in. I was like, the end of the day, I was like, this is amazing. It's so great. Like, what a great day. First day I didn't cry. And then my husband comes in and he goes, yeah, you dropped in on that guy. And I think he was a local, which is always like when you're surfing somebody else's in someone else's beach, you always want to give priority to the locals because like that's their beach. You're a guest. It's like you're a guest at their house. And so you want to, you know, just respect the people who live there, who are locals. So he was a local and he was mad. And not only was he mad, the friend he was with was like even madder. And I guess he like completely cursed out my coach, like just yelling and swearing and like all these things about how I shouldn't have dropped in on him and blah, blah, blah. I had no idea this happened, right? Because I like am like riding the wave of my life, didn't even see the guy, like just, you know, took the wave in and was like feeling all great about myself. So my husband comes in and tells me, and there come the tears. So it like wasn't actually a day I didn't cry, but I didn't cry out in the water. So it was, you know, we're moving up in the world. So that was day four. And then day five, I was like, come on, please let this be the day that I don't cry out in the water. Day five was another really hard day. And I just got caught. I made it out past the break, like really fast the first time, rode in a wave and just got caught. And I kid you not, I turtle rolled 20 times. I just got caught in this set and I turtle rolled 20 times. And if you have ever turtle rolled, it's exhausting. It's exhausting because you're on this board, you're paddling, which is tiring. You then have this huge wave coming towards you. You take a deep breath, you turtle roll down, the wave goes over you, you turtle roll back up. You like wipe your eyes, try to start paddling, and it's like, and then there's another wave. And then you have to take a deep breath and turtle roll. And by the time you get back up, it's like another wave. And you're just, it's exhausting. Like, and oftentimes you can do that a couple times and then you'll have a break in the set and then you'll be able to paddle out. And this like set was just relentless. It was just like, I mean, I really turtle rolled 20 times. And there was another instructor and one of the other girls in our group who was also kind of caught in this set trying to get out past the break. And I was alone because my coach was still out with my husband. And so I kind of like inched towards this coach, like hoping that they would help me like get out past the break. I don't know what he was going to do, but it just felt more comforting to be near somebody as I was trying to fight the water. And at one point I kind of got behind this girl and a wave was coming and the coach started yelling at me to like get out of the way and like move out. And, it's loud and you can't really hear anything. And he was absolutely right. I was not positioned well because again, like I said, the most dangerous thing when you're in the water is boards. My board, someone else's board hitting you is the most dangerous thing. And I was directly behind her. I was in not a very good position. Like he was absolutely right. I needed to move so that in case her board, like I don't even think she had her board. I think it was attached to her leg, but I don't think she had it in her hands. So I absolutely needed to get out of the way so that when the wave came, like the board didn't hit me. But he's like yelling at me and like telling me to move and like very aggressive because it was urgent. And so anyway, I moved. But I just like lost it. I'm like so exhausted, like 20 turtle rolls in, just got yelled at. And I just was like, I can't do it. So I paddled back in and I just like hung out in the white water, just kind of like brought everything back down. All of that fear. I was like, this has really pushed me. Like every single day there has been something that I'm having to like push myself up against. Was able to like take some deep breaths. My coach actually came back in, was like, hey, are you okay? And like was able to help me swim back out. And we got back out. So five out of five days, guys. I was in it. I was dealing with the fear. I was crying out on the water every single time. So why am I telling you this story? Because fear is something that we all deal with. And why did I keep going out? Like some of you may be saying, well, you're kind of a glutton for punishment, Amber. Like you didn't have to go back out. Like You could have sat on the shore. You could have not gone back out. Like, again, that was a choice that I made. Why did you keep putting yourself in this place where it's like you're crying every single day? And it is because I wanted something more than the fear. Like, what I wanted, the learning, the experience, the education, the ability to be able to surf was more important to me than the fear that I was feeling in the moment. And I learned very early on in my life that if I let fear drive the bus, I may stay more quote unquote safe, but it will be at the expense of my growth, my fulfillment, and the possibility of what I could be. And I think so many of us live life based off of fear and letting fear drive the bus and letting fear keep us from things that could be incredibly fulfilling in our life. And yet we don't do it because of fear. We don't do it because we're afraid. And I committed a long time ago that I didn't want that to be me, that I wanted to be someone who had a fulfilling life, who was committed to growth, who was willing to do the scary, hard things that were that brought fear up in me because of what was on the other side of fear. And I think that there, if you never are afraid and you never are doing things that are fearful and you're only ever staying out inside your comfort zone, there's only so much growth and fulfillment that you can have. And it is when you step outside of that comfort zone and you start to feel fear, yes, that you are now expanding your comfort zone. Yeah, you are now in that growth zone. So I use this analogy a lot of imagining that when we are comfortable, you can imagine a person like a stick figure inside of a box, and inside that box is the comfort zone. And as long as you stay inside that comfort zone, there's no fear, right? You're very comfortable. Your brain is very familiar with the surroundings. It knows exactly what to expect, and there's no fear associated with it. And as soon as you step outside of that comfort zone, fear comes up. Your brain feels that fear. It's now unfamiliar. It is now uncomfortable. And if you are able and willing to tolerate that discomfort, what happens is your brain starts to settle down, right? It feels fear, but then it becomes more familiar. It sees that you're not going to die. And now your comfort zone has expanded. So now what used to be in that uncomfortable fear-based zone, now that has expanded and you don't feel fear anymore. Now you feel comfortable. And if we can continue to do that, we continue to step a little bit outside of our comfort zone and have our comfort zone expand, and a little bit outside our comfort zone and have our comfort zone expand. Now our comfort zone is much bigger and we're able to do much more. We're able to live a more fulfilled life. We're able to live so much bigger when we're willing to do that. And that's something that I've been committed to for a really long time, is like pushing myself, growing, being willing to feel the fear and do it anyway. Because I know on the other side of that is a lot of growth and a lot of fulfillment and a realization of the strength that I have inside me, which is often, we often underplay or downplay or don't realize the power and strength that we have inside of us. And so that's why I kept going back out there. I was like, even though it was scary, even though every single day of this darn surf trip, I cried out on my board, I wanted to be there. I wanted to learn. I wanted to expand my comfort zone. And I wanted to face this fear that I had and be able to do this really cool thing with my husband, be able to, you know, take the opportunity that was in front of me to have all of this training and experience from people who knew what they were doing and who could really help me learn and grow. But it wasn't a comfortable experience. There was fun moments, absolutely, but there was a lot of fear. There were some scary moments. There was a lot of my brain saying, you can't do this. You can't catch this wave. This wave's too big. This wave's going to eat you. What are you doing? Why are you trying to catch this wave? So I had to like fight that a lot. And it is far easier for me to tell somebody else to step outside of their comfort zone than for it is for me to do it myself. And I tell people to step outside of their comfort zones all the time. And this was quite the opportunity for me to practice what I preach. And I think as coaches, it is incredibly important that we're willing to practice what we preach. And if we don't practice what we preach, we are out of integrity and it lessens our ability to, you know, teach our things, right? Nobody wants to take advice or education from somebody who doesn't actually do the thing that they're telling you to do. And so this was a beautiful opportunity, and I recognized it about a couple days in, of this was a beautiful opportunity for me to feel that fear and to do it anyway, because I tell people to do it all the time, and I have to be willing to do that myself. So to kind of wrap this up, this experience up into like four takeaways or four ways that I was able to move past this fear to do something that I really wanted to do. And I hope by sharing this, that whatever is scary for you, you know, leaving your job, entering the workforce, starting a new fitness plan, joining a program, parenting your kids, going and confronting somebody, like these scary things that we feel fear about, I hope that it will allow you to be able to feel that fear and do it anyway. So four things that I came up with. Number one, the outcome I wanted was important enough to me, right? The outcome, think about whatever it is you're afraid of. What is the outcome that you're wanting? And is it important enough for you? Is it worth going through the fear to achieve? And sometimes the answer may be no, because it doesn't really matter. It's not that important. But if it is, and it is important, that pull of that outcome that you want can help you say, okay, I'm feeling fear and I'm going to step into it because on the other side of that fear is something that's really important to me. Number two, I didn't try to ignore the fear. I tried to make friends with it. I tried to feel it. I named it. I said, I'm feeling fear. Like, that's what I'm feeling. I located where it was in my body. I located how it felt. I located the sensations that I was present to. I cried. You know, I didn't try to hold it in. I full on cried out there in the middle of the ocean on my surfboard. And I think that that's really important. I think when we try to shove down negative emotions, or we try to ignore, or we try to not feel those negative emotions, they don't actually go away. Like, that doesn't actually work. They pop back up because they need to be processed, and emotion is like a tunnel. You have to go through the emotion. And so I would say if there's something that you're feeling afraid about right now, feel it. Don't make it wrong. Don't make it bad. The fear is there to, you know, it's your brain trying to say, hey, this thing may be a little unsafe. The key with that, though, is that unsafe is exactly where growth is. Growth is inherently unsafe because it's something you haven't done before. Our brain really likes familiarity. It really likes things that are repeatable that we've done before. And, you know, growth is not that way. It's inherently new. It's inherently, you know, fearful. Our brain gets fearful of these new spaces. Okay. So number three, I kept moving forward. It was like, and honestly, like during the session, sometimes I would pull back a little bit. Like I would say, okay, I'm not ready to go for a wave right now. And I would paddle out a little bit further and I'd like sit on my board and I'd just like be there and experience it. I'm not ready to go for a wave. But then I would, you know, get my bearings on me and I would say, okay, I'm ready to go for another wave. Let's try to get a small wave. I kept taking steps to move forward and I kept pushing myself to do that. Not in a stupid way, not in a like machokistic way, like in a way of like, okay, I want to keep making progress. I want this thing that feels uncomfortable to eventually feel comfortable. And in order for that to happen, I have to sit in the discomfort. And so, yeah, sometimes I said I was ready to go when I wasn't quite ready to go. Because I knew that forward momentum was going to get me to that place of comfort with the discomfort. And then number four, I celebrated facing the fear, whether or not I caught the wave. Even just me going for the wave was something I would celebrate, especially when I was like really trying to get back on the saddle. And I was really in my fear about the waves feeling really big and getting eaten by the waves. I celebrated even just paddling after a wave. And there were a couple times, I actually remember one time when I got out past the break, this was probably on day two, and I was out there crying and I was like, okay, I'm ready to like give it a shot, give it a try. I paddled in a little bit and the very first wave I said I was ready to take, I paddled on it and I just like wanted to look. I just wanted to like kind of look over the wave. So I like paddled and then just kind of like looked and then went back. And I was like, okay, I did that first step of like paddling with the wave. Okay, the next one I'm going to like get up to the peak and I'm like, I'm not going to drop down. I'm just going to like, again, kind of feel like look and see people around me and like just feel what that next step feels like. And then I'm going to, okay, I did that. And then it was like the third time I was like, okay, this time I'm going to try and stand up, but I'm going to like, actually, I think I went to my knees next. I was like, I'm not going to stand up on this one. I'm just going to go on my knees. So then I caught the wave like on my knees. And then it was like the fourth time I like caught it on my feet. And so it was like this progression of just continuing to keep moving forward but like celebrating every single one of those milestones, right? It was like, even though previously I was jumping up and catching waves, no big deal, like I was celebrating even just like going after a wave. And I think really being kind with yourself and celebrating just even the fact that, hey, I'm feeling afraid and I'm doing this anyway. And regardless of the outcome, that is important and that is worth celebrating. That is you feeling the fear and you doing it anyway. And that's an amazing thing. Okay, so this ended up being way longer than I thought it was. I was like, oh, this will probably like be like a 20-minute episode. I apparently had a lot more to say on this topic than I thought, but I hope that this was fun. Overall, the experience was really great. I can't even tell you how much I learned in like a 1 week period of intensive time. And I think it also just goes to show when you have a really good teacher and you have a really good coach, the amount of progress you can make in one short week was like equivalent to like years of trying to do it on my own, years of watching YouTube videos, years of like this, you know, DIYing. And I think about that with my clients and how they say often the same thing. They're like, I've been trying to do this on my own for years, Amber. And joining Macros 101 and, you know, the time that we spent together accelerated and exploded my growth and my ability to be able to actually implement the things that I've been learning. So if that's you and you're wanting help in your health and fitness journey, you're wanting to learn how to be able to use macros and be able to become a macro scientist to be able to customize your nutrition to your goals, then you're going to want to get on the wait list for Macros 101. Doors open very soon on March 4th. You can go to bicepsafterbabies.com/waitlist to come and join us. All right, that wraps up this episode of Biceps After Babies Radio. I'm Amber. Now go out and be strong, because remember, my friend, you can do anything. Hey friend, have you heard the news? We have a Biceps After Babies Radio insider list. If you love Biceps After Babies Radio, you don't want to miss a thing, head to bicepsafterbabies.com/insider to join the group. You'll be the first to know all things about the podcast, see some behind the scenes, and get special messages from yours truly. We want to make this a special community for those who are fans of the podcast. And last, did this episode particularly resonate with you? If so, will you please share it? Either send the link to someone who would find it valuable, or take a screenshot and post it to your social media and tell your family and friends why they should listen. Make sure you tag me at Biceps After Babies so I can hear your feedback and give you a little love. And you know, if you aren't already following me on Instagram or Facebook, that's the perfect time to hit that follow button. Thank you for being here and listening to Biceps After Babies Radio.